well, look, thank you very much for letting me contribute remotely, and I'm sorry that that I can't be there in person. So if we go to the second slide, can we go to the second slide? Okay. All right, so this is the subtext of my talk. You know, there are a number of tensions that various people have pointed out with Lambda CDM and the bank view of Lambda CDM. And so the subtext is, you know, is Lambda CDM fake news? Okay, so if we go to the next slide, here are my assertions. Okay, so this is what I'm going to try and persuade you of. That there are no internal consistencies, at least that I've been able to find in the Planck data. For Lambda CDM, the Planck polarization tells the same story as the Planck temperature. So, you know, if we didn't have the temperature, we'd be telling you the same story. There has been some speculation, which I'll go into in the bit more detail later, that parameters move depending on the multipole range that you investigate, and in particular, what I'll show you is that you know, temperature and polarization restricted over the range of multipoles that WMAP sampled give exactly the same Lambda CDM parameters, and I mean, you know, in detail as the full Planck mission. And so, you know, my point of view is that if your experiment are the CMB experiments, large scale structure, Adam and H naught and so on, if they disagree with Planck, then either you're wrong or there's new physics beyond Lambda CDM. So I think you know, cosmology is in a very interesting position at the moment. Okay. Now, what I would imagine, we go to the next slide, is that the audience is actually very familiar with the Planck results. So what I want to do is to really just, you know, highlight a few key things, and then talk about some new results that you won't have seen. Okay, so Planck surveyed the sky over a wide frequency range, so from 30 gigahertz right the way up to 857 gigahertz. The two highest frequency channels were not polarized, but everything else was polarization sensitive. So this shows you the set of Planck maps. And the first thing that I wanted to highlight was that you can see the galaxy in the middle of these pictures. And you can see that the amplitude of galactic emission is high at 30 gigahertz. Then it goes through a minimum at around 70 gigahertz. Then you start being sensitive to dust. And by the time you're at 545 gigahertz and 857 gigahertz, you're just seeing dust. In fact, at those two highest frequencies, you're not sensitive to any primordial fluctuations anymore. All you're seeing is dust. So you would naively think that the best place to work for cosmology is where the foregrounds are at their lowest amplitude, which is around, you know, 70 gigahertz. Okay. And that's not right. Okay. So if we go to the next picture, in fact, what I will argue is that the cleanest place to work is at 143 gigahertz. This shows you the 143 gigahertz map. And then if we go to the next slide, this is just 143 gigahertz with the 545 gigahertz map subtracted from it with a single coefficient. And there's a remarkable property of galactic dust, which is that it's very nearly universal over a very large area of the sky. So cleaning 143 gigahertz with 545 really does a very, very good job of removing dust emission. And if we go to the next slide, that shows you one of the official Planck component separation maps. So this is the SMECA map. And if you compare the previous map that I showed you, you know, just subtracting out 545 with the SMECA map, they're indistinguishable except when you're very close to the galactic plane. So in fact, you don't need to do any fancy component separation to get science quality results on the primordial fluctuations using the Planck data. Simple cleaning with one of the high frequency maps is good for most of the science that you would want to do. Okay, and I'll make use of this later on in the talk when I show you some new results. Okay, so if we go to the next slide, so this shows the temperature power spectrum that we produced with the first Planck data release. This was based on half the data. So that was back in 2013. And so this is the temperature power spectrum. The red line is the best fit lambda CDM model. The little gray dots are the power spectrum multipole by multipole. The lower panel shows you the residuals with respect to the best fit. And then the blue points with errors are the power spectrum averaged in bands in multipole of width of 31. So that was the spectrum, and it's a brilliant fit to lambda CDM. It's a simple six parameter model. So then in 2018, if we go to the next slide, then you can see that the results that we published last year, if we just blink those two pictures, you know, you can see that they're very, very similar. All that's happened is that the errors have gone down. Okay, so the parameters from Planck have been stable, and as we, you know, when we analyze the full mission, the residuals with respect to the best fit lambda CDM model just went down. We also in 2018 produced high quality TE and EE spectra, and so those are shown on the next two slides. The next slide shows the TE spectrum. The red line is the best fit cosmology fitted to TT, so it's not a fit to the TE spectrum. Residuals are plotted below, and then the next slide shows the EE spectrum, and again the red line is the best fit to TT, not to EE. In addition, we analyzed gravitational lensing and produced a lensing deflection field map, which is shown in the next slide. And the next slide shows you the power spectrum of the lensing deflection potential from Planck and from SPT and ACT. And the black line is the best fit lambda CDM model. So you know, as I'm sure you all know, that what we found is very good fit of the Planck power spectra, you know, TT, TE, EE, and lensing power spectrum fits a simple six-parameter lambda CDM model. I'm not going to say anything very much about non-Gaussianity in this talk because we've done extensive searches for non-Gaussianity, And as far as we can see, the fluctuations are accurately Gaussian. Now, one of the key results that I want to highlight are the joint constraints on the scalar power spectrum and the tensor to scalar ratio. If we go to the next slide, these are the latest results from the 2018 papers. So you've got tensor scalar ratio on the y-axis and the scalar spectral index on the x-axis. So what Planck is doing here is giving you tight constraints on the tilt. The constraint on the tensor to scalar spectrum is actually coming from the Bicep-Keck experiment. So these are the Bicep-Keck 2015 run results that have been folded in here. And the key thing about this is that these results imply inflationary potentials, which are actually quite flat. So if we go to the next slide. If we just look at a simple slow roll expansion, then if we have a power law potential, 1 minus ns should be, you know, alpha plus 2 over n, and the tensor to scalar ratio should be 4 alpha over n, where n is the number of e-folds to the end of inflation. And if we put, measured parameters, the measured value, the scalar spectral index of 0.965 for 60 e-folds of inflation, then we would have alpha of about 2 and r of about 0.15. And if we go to the previous slide, that's not consistent with the data. So simple power law model of inflation doesn't work unless the index alpha is small. So I think this is an interesting result, because what it's saying is that we're seeing a hierarchy in slow roll parameters, where the absence of a tensor to scale of a tensor detection, it means that epsilon has to be small, but the measured tilt must be coming from eta. So for some reason, we have inflation potentials where eta is very much bigger than epsilon. So that's where inflation model building is going now, which is to try and find natural reasons for explaining that hierarchy. So another interesting result is in the next slide, because this shows constraints on dark energy, on the equation of state of dark energy and its time evolution, WA. And if we exclude models that have a phantom equation of state, then you're confined, the observational data are confining you to this small little region here, where the equation of state is very close to the equation of state of a cosmological constant. And as these measurements improve, now that for dynamical dark energy model, W naught is linked to the first derivative of a quintessence potential. And so we're seeing the same thing, that you need a flat potential. So at early times with inflation, we need flat potentials. At late times, we need flat potentials. So as these measurements improve, then it raises the question of trying to explain these hierarchies and why we're observing these flat potentials. Okay, so if we go to the next slide, so the Planck results have been around for a while, and so people have commented on a number of unusual things. So here's a brief list of some things that people have worried about. The temperature power spectrum If you analyze these, they want more lensing than in standard Lambda CDN. So we can multiply the expected lensing perturbation to the temperature power spectrum by a constant A lens. And if everything were consistent, we would expect to see A lens equal 1, and we find A lens a little bit bigger than 1. The direct lensing measurements, actually, if you then combine those with the temperature data, then you get A lens equals 1. But the question is this telling us something? Okay. If you analyze the temperature power spectra, then the Planck data favor closed universes. Addison and various others have pointed out that you get slightly different parameters if you look at the high multipoles and compare them to the... Sorry?
Do you mind quoting the significance of these discrepancies?
Yes, I will. I will in just a second. Okay, and there are outliers. There's some outliers in the TT spectrum, which you might have noticed when I showed you the residuals, and in the TE spectrum, Al pointed out an outlier at one point at L of 165 in TE. So there are a number of these features. Now, these things are significant at around, you know, somewhere between the 2 and not even 3 sigma, right? So 2.5 sigma effects, okay? And but nevertheless, you know, people have worried about them, okay? So one of the things that we've looked at, and I'll show you the results of this investigation, is to make more powerful likelihoods, okay? Because, you know, if you have an effect that's, say, 2.6 sigma, then you don't need to improve, you know, if you improve the data a little bit, your expectation would be that that effect would decrease in statistical significance. I mean, new 2.6 sigma things, you know, will appear somewhere else, but basically things should get better, okay? So that's what I set out to do with Stephen Grattan. You're very limited in scope in how you can extract more from the Planck data, and the only real way of doing it is to use more Sky. And so that's what we did. We were aggressive in our use of Sky, much more aggressive than in the official Planck papers. So that's what I will show you. I will show you what happens when you make more aggressive use of Sky and produce more powerful likelihoods. Okay, so the next slide shows you what happens in consistency in the temperature power spectra. So this is comparing just the differences between 143 cross 143 with 217 cross 217 and with 143 cross 217. Okay, and these are on the same area of the sky except for point source holes. So mostly what you're seeing here is just the noise with a little bit of cosmic variance, because we're covering almost the same area of sky and cancelling out cosmic variance. The first thing I want you to note is that these are absolutely brilliant, in brilliant agreement. Okay, there's, you know, there are no noticeable outliers, the spectra are telling you the same story. And so we don't have to do very much, you know, quantitatively to see what happens with this exercise. So if we go to the next slide, okay, this is the temperature spectrum. So this is almost the same as in the 2018 paper. And then the next one shows you what happens when we use more Sky. Okay, so if you blink backwards and forwards between those a little bit, okay, then you can see that by eye, the more powerful likelihood is cleaner. The parameters of the best fit lambda CDM model are almost identical. But what's happened is that the residuals have got smaller. Okay, and that's basically the bottom line of this exercise, that you know, we've done this and things just look in better agreement with lambda CDM. So if you go to the next slide, that shows the TE spectrum. And then if you go to the next slide, that shows you the new TE spectrum. It's slightly cleaner. And then same thing for the EE spectrum. We go to the next slide. Okay, that's so that just shows you the change. And so so in all of the spectra, things become cleaner. So if we go to the parameters of the lambda CDM model, so if you go to the next slide, this shows you a bunch of parameters. So Adam will be interested in the one on the top left with the Hubble constant. So that's I haven't plotted EE because EE alone doesn't constrain parameters very well. Okay. So what you're seeing is TT compared to TE parameters compared to the combined TTTE likelihood. So if we go to the next slide, this is what we get with our new analysis. Okay, and you know what's happened here is the consistency between TE and TT has improved, and in fact, if we look at the top panel showing H naught against the other parameters, you can see that the results from TT and TE are almost identical. But if we now blink and concentrate on the blue contours, if we go back forward, okay, the blue contours hardly move. Okay, we've improved, made more aggressive use of Sky, but it's hardly made any difference to the combined TTT parameters for lambda CDM. So if we go to the next slide, what this shows you is that you've got results for TTTEEE. If we add the lensing likelihood from Planck, it hardly does anything to the parameters. If we add BAO, then we get a slight improvement in the parameters. But even adding the very latest Baran acoustic oscillation data doesn't really do very much to the parameters of the lambda CDM model. Okay, so the next slide. So now this shows the impact. So what happens with this new likelihood for the A lens parameter? We expect this parameter to be unity. Okay, and what you can see very clearly is that the temperature data are pulling you at around the 2 sigma level away from A lens equals 1. The TE data are completely neutral, so they don't really constrain A lens very well. And then when you combine it with, when you could use all of the polarization data together with TT, you end up with a 2 sigma preference for A lens. And so what we find, we make a more powerful likelihood, and the statistical significance of A lens, it goes down to around 2 sigma. It's not worse than it was before, slightly better than it was before. There's no evidence here that there's any physics in this. You can see how delicate this whole thing is. If you go to the next plot, it shows you the residuals, but the three frequency combination spectra that form the TT likelihood Okay, we don't use 100 gigahertz anymore for this more powerful analysis. And the three spectra are in different colors, and they're in very good agreement. What you can see is a sort of ripple. Okay, the solid black line is just the smooth combined spectrum from those three spectra. And so you can see this ripple. And ALENS is just picking up this ripple. Okay, so that's why there's a little pull to higher lensing amplitudes. But it's a ripple that's reproduced in the three spectra. And as far as we can see, it's a statistical fluctuation. The tendency for Planck to favor Planck temperature, to favor closed universes, is a manifestation of this ripple. It couples actually more strongly to curvature. So if we go to the next slide, you'll see the constraints on omega k and h naught. There's almost a perfect geometrical degeneracy, so you get this long banana. And then you break that degeneracy by adding BAO, either adding lensing or BAO, breaks the degeneracy, and then you get basically flat universes. You can see that the statistical significance of this pull to closed universes is only at the 2-sigma level, okay? Less than the 2-sigma level. So you can see that from the one-dimensional posteriors. So these effects are reproducible across frequencies. They're not high statistical significance. Looking at parameter shifts is a very tricky business. So that's shown on the next slide. Okay, you really do have to worry about foregrounds. And so what I've shown here is for temperature, it shows the parameter shifts of just analyzing TT over the multiple range 2 to 800, that's WMAP type multiple range. And the parameters that you get, the green set of contours, are actually very close to the WMAP parameters. The gray contours show you what happens if you do 50 to 800. That's just eliminating the low multipoles in temperature. And that's just to show that the very low multipoles really have no bearing on this story. They don't really pull parameters very much. And then the high multiple range, 800 to 2,500, where you see shifts, okay? But they're not unreasonable shifts. And then the combined 2,500 D. So there's nothing unusual here. And then the next picture shows you what happens if you add in the polarization. And this is quite interesting because if we look at the green versus the blue contours, the green contours are now just using multiples 2 to 800, but including polarization. And you get parameters for lambda CDM that are almost identical to the parameters of the full Planck likelihood. But in other words, if WMAP had been able to measure polarization to multiples of 800, they would have got the WMAP results. This is also quite a delicate thing, and that's shown in the next slide, because what I've shown here, the green is the residuals with respect to the full TTE solution, but just using multiples 800 to 2,500 and consistently determining the foreground parameters over that multiple range. And then the purple line is the best fit model. And that purple line, you can see it fits the green points very well. it doesn't fit the lower multipoles very well at all. And so that's why it's not favored. But there's nothing unusual in that behavior. And then the next picture shows the T spectrum, because Obied and Wayne Hu and others commented on an outlier in the T spectrum at multiples of 165. And you can see there are a couple of low points, but there's nothing particularly alarming or unusual. So if we go to the next slide, so basically for extended models like neutrino, varying neutrino masses or varying number of relativistic species, the results that we get from this analysis are perfectly consistent with what's in the Planck 2018 papers. There's no evidence for any additional relativistic species or for large neutrino masses. So everything is consistent with the standard parameters, 3.046 neutrinos, very small neutrino masses. So you can see this is not a good solution to varying number of relativistic species is not a good solution to the Hubble constant discrepancy. The Planck data just don't want that. Adam's already given us a nice talk on the Hubble constant. So if we go to the next slide, just shows something from a paper that I wrote with postdocs and students on the inverse distance ladder. There have been many papers like this, but what it shows is if you adopt a WMAP value for the sound horizon or a Planck value for the sound horizon, then in a pretty model independent way, the Baron acoustic oscillation and supernova data give you posteriors on H naught that follow the red and the black lines. The green band is the allowed range from Planck in lambda CDM. And the gray band is the Shu's distance ladder determination. So I think there's a consensus in the community that really, if this is a real discrepancy, then you have to change the sound horizon. You have to change the model at high redshift, not at low redshift. And that's related to the rails that the geometrical rails that the BAO and the supernova provide at low redshift. The next picture shows results from a recent paper on lensing. The Planck results S8 is sigma 8 times omega m over 0.3 to the power 0.6. So this is a combination of parameters that's reasonably well determined by weak gravitational lensing experiments. The key point that Judaki and co made in their paper is that at the moment calibration of the redshifts, calibrating photometric redshifts seems to be the dominant uncertainty. So you can move results up and down by about a sigma in sigma 8, depending on how you calibrate the redshifts. So in this paper, they were arguing that that the difference between the dark energy survey year one results, which are basically compatible with Planck, and with their kids Viking results, could actually be be caused by the differences in calibrating photometric redshifts. So clearly we need to, you know, solve those experimental problems. Okay, so here's my conclusion. You know, we've played extensively with the Planck data and pushed it as hard. I don't think there's anything more that we can extract really from the Planck data. And, you know, we were motivated to do this to see if any sort of 2.5 sigma effect got worse and pointed to something, some new physics or something unusual in the Planck data. But in every case, things got better. And so my conclusion is that simple six parameter lambda CDM fits the Planck data perfectly within acceptable statistical errors. So, you know, is lambda CDM fake news? I don't think so. I think there's, you know, very strong evidence to support the lambda CDM model. And so if your experiment disagrees with Planck, then either you're wrong or there is new physics beyond lambda CDM, which is another way of saying that I'm very confident of the Planck data. Any new physics must produce temperature and polarization spectra that are degenerate with the six parameter lambda CDM model over the range of multiples probed by Planck. Okay. So in other words, you know, the Planck data, you know, particularly, you know, with this new analysis, I would expect to be neutral. Okay. So any evidence is strongly dependent on the fidelity of other data. So that's my conclusion. I've exhausted what I can do with Planck. I don't want to work on Planck anymore, and we have to move on to other data and see what we get. So thank you.
Thank you very much for this great talk. I guess there will be a lot of questions, and I would like to ask you to keep all of the questions that are going in the direction of cosmic tensions, either the H-naught tension or these CMB anomalies that George was talking about, for the discussion session. So if you have any questions that are referring not to the tensions, you can ask them now.
I have a question. So now that you don't want to work on Planck anymore, what do you want to work on?
That's a good question. I'm doing some stuff for DESI.
DESI, okay, good.
Okay. Any other question?
In order to find a resolution to the recent Hubble consultation, it appears that you have to lower the sound horizon. You have to compensate that by raising the density, hopefully before recombination. So,
yes,
is it possible to raise density of omega radiation a small amount to give you the 9% difference in the tension without ruining all your wonderful fits to lambda CDM?
I think that's the problem with any explanation. You know, you have to preserve the lambda CDM fit. Okay. So, you know, if for example, I mean, you might have seen papers on interacting neutrinos with, you know, with a strong interaction, and you know, if you then have to add in additional relativistic species to try and make models that look like the six parameter lambda CDM model. Okay, so you have to start adding more and more ingredients just to mimic the Lambda CDM model. Okay, if you look at the early dark energy papers, well, first the models that have that people have looked at, in addition to you know the parameters being quite unnatural, they don't actually work very well. Okay, you can increase H naught a little bit. Okay, but they don't. They don't take you slap bang in the middle of Adam's range, and they produce an effect on the polarization damping tail, which you know future experiments should be able to you know set tight limits on. So. So yeah, so you know, I think you know it's not straightforward.
Is it related to tension as well?
Not exactly. Since I'm not a CMB expert, I think it's always a harmless, innocent question. So the you know, with regard to the motivation of parameters. You know, you mentioned that the potentials that one would have, you know, sort of favored for inflationary models are sort of being squeezed. But the spectral slope, I would assume is, you know, slightly related to the inflationary model in the sense that K is dropping, you know, large versus scales versus small scales. And I noticed in the plots that you showed that the spectral slope can have a large correlation with the other parameters in Lambda CDM. Is that coming through the silk dampening scale? What is actually causing the spectral slope to have such a high correlation with other parameters?
Right, well, Okay. I'm not quite sure, you know, how to answer this. I mean, it is actually tightly constrained, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a physically observable in the sense that you know you can see the fluctuations re-entering and you can measure those. But I'm just wondering,
yes,
why is it so closely to other parameters? Somehow, I naively looking at the fit, I would think that that's just a, you know, it's just a number. That you know there could have been other sources for that number, but it seems to be important. the parameterization.
I'm not quite sure of the question. I mean,
I'm just trying to understand whether their fitness is meant to be important. Like, if it's like the silk damping scale, like the fact that you see the turn off in the power as you go to high L, and that power would have come in, you know, slightly modified by NS. I as a novice, I don't understand how it factors in so strongly.
Oh well, I mean, the tightest coupling is between. I mean, you need a wide lever arm in wave number, right, to constrain NS. So it's large scales, you know, versus small scales. Okay, so you know the ISW effect has an effect.
Oh, I see. So maybe even the low L before the single peak that's constraining it, probably. Maybe it's just made.
Well. Okay, so I mean, if you look at the Planck papers, you'll see that you know if we add in a run in the spectral index, okay, then we get a pull, you know, to sort of, you know, unnaturally large runs in the spectral index.
I see.
Okay, and that's not a very statistically significant result, but that's what we get, and that's coming because there's a little bit of a mismatch between the low multipoles. The low multipoles are lower amplitude than you'd have expected in Lambda CDM, and that pulls parameters like a run.
Yeah, George, I had a question. The difference in cosmological parameters you mentioned when you split the data at L of 800, whatever whatever significance you attach to that, whatever that level is, when you increase the data set by using the additional sky, the statistical significance of those differences, do they stay the same numerical value? Do they go up? Do they go down?
No, it looks better. Okay.
So
as I said, every one of these sort of internal tensions in the Planck data that people were interested in, when we looked at this more powerful likelihood, things got better.
Okay. Are you publishing that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, that's great. I mean, I think that's great.
Okay, so is there not any more questions about anything not related to the text?